Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray, and my co-host for tonight is Arcana Amore. Arcana and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. And if you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance, check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Arcana. How's it going?
Good evening there, Pam. It's going good, thank you. And good evening to all you poetic peeps out there that are listening in the early hours of the morning to this show. It's great to hear from you, Pam. How are you keeping today?
All in all, I'm doing pretty good. You know, the weather's been a little warm for my taste, but that's just because I'm whiny about warm weather. So I've been hiding indoors with the air conditioner. But yes, it is. I see Jeremy on the board. I see Selena on the board. You know, it's great to see them both. Very cool. Hello to them. Hello to all our listeners. But yeah, no, it's been a nice, calm, pleasant day. And of course, you know, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets and just delving into some interesting poetry. And we have a great mix tonight from 3 different contests that poetry inspired by the poet W.H. Auden, who, if anybody out there hasn't read him, I highly recommend checking him out. Definitely he was very talented and very versatile in his voice. So.
That's cool. You know something, Pam? I was listening to Auden earlier today, because I'll be honest, I hadn't really heard of the man. And I was listening to an interview with him. And you know who he reminded me of? He reminded me a lot of Eric.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, I can definitely, you know what, you're right. That is a great observation there.
You know where I'm coming from with that? I mean it as a compliment,
yes.
By the way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can't compare a poet to Eric Swenson and not mean it as a compliment. But yeah, I think what you mean is the way that he mixes kind of unique phrasing and imagery together.
Absolutely. And also the tone of his voice as well put me in mind of Eric when I listened to him speaking.
Yes, yeah. Yep, they both have very similar tones to their voices. But yes, definitely Auden was an intelligent writer. I have to say, honestly, I don't know a whole lot about him other than the fact I know he was openly gay. I know he was English, and I know I like his poetry. Other than that, I have to do a little bit more research to really know more about him. So.
Yeah, he's had a pretty interesting and varied lifestyle from the looks of things. So,
yeah.
Okay, we've set the framework there for our talented friend, Mr. Auden. So, would you like me to put up the first piece that we will be having on our show tonight, Pam? Okay.
Yes,
so, piece I'm putting up is called I Am Me by Sam Sampson. So who would you like to read that piece?
Well, you can decide who reads the pieces.
Okay. In that case, I'll lead off with this one. Let's give it a go. This is called I Am Me by Sam Sampson. She walked into the gym. 10-year class reunion. Head held high all of her young life. She had been in love with herself. Loved by the boys for her beauty. Hated by her female classmates, except those who strove to emulate her. She scanned the room and found no one looking her way. She stood there in her new dress, hair perfect, nails shining. She wondered at the snub. I am me. Where are my sycophants? Harsh reality arrives with a slap, in love with herself. She had not noticed her beauty fading into obscurity. End poem.
Great read there, Arcana. And,
thank you.
Oh my goodness. Oh, what was that?
No, I just saying thank you, Pam. Thanks for that.
Oh,
on,
yeah, absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a wonderful write, a wonderful brevity by Sam Sampson. I thought it was a great story write, that it's a story, and yet at the same time, it rings of truth for so many people. I really like that he used the word sycophant, with the idea of people who kiss up to people with power or wealth. In order to gain something for themselves. So great use of that word. Also the ending, of course, when she realizes that when she had been so in love with herself, harsh reality arises in slap, in love with herself, she had not noticed her beauty fading into obscurity. He wrote to the quote, narcissist does not fall in love with his reflection because it is beautiful, but because it is his. If it were his beauty that enthralled him, he would be set free in a few years by its fading. But I really like that Sam Sampson puts this into a common and relatable, setting. The class reunion, meeting up with the classmates years later, and it's interesting because a lot of people don't seem to either want to change or don't notice that life has changed around them. They want to remain, the popular jock or the popular cheerleader, and that isn't real life. You have to move on. You have to, grow and mature and change as a person. But I thought this was a great take on the prompt because it took the Greek mythology of the prompt, but it made it like a modern setting. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, reading the comment that he's chosen for his prompt here, I think Sam's captured this really eloquently with his write. I particularly like the way that he sort of describes this setting where he's actually taken a scenario where you've got a young pretty girl who is like popular and beautiful and attracting all the attention in her classroom with her classmates. But she's missing the bigger picture because he nicely sums it up in the last stanza where he's saying basically, really harsh reality arrives with a slap because that image that she's got of herself that she sees in the mirror, she's not noticed that with each passing year, that beauty is slowly fading into obscurity. And one day, all she'll have left is what she's actually about, her personality, which no amount of beauty can compensate for. So once that's gone, that's all she'll have left. And so anybody that she's really going to leave an impression on, she'll be leaving it with what is her core essence and not what she looks like. So really well done. I like the way that he put that across. Great writing there.
Absolutely. And wonderful comment there. I have to tell this story real quick. I actually had this guy that bullied me throughout high school, and I was such a painfully shy. I know it's hard to tell from the fact that I talk on so many shows, but I was in high school painfully shy. And I had grown into my maturity, and become a stronger person. And a few years after high school, I ran into him and he started trying to bully me. And I shoved him down and I said, I am no longer fucking afraid of you. And he was with his friends and I had no clue what anybody was going to do. And it probably wasn't the smartest thing to do, but I tell you, I shoved him down and I said that to him. And his friends laughed and he just stormed off.
And how good did that feel? How good did that feel?
Oh my God, it was such a good feeling. It was such a good feeling to say, I am no longer fucking afraid of you.
Take that, mofo.
Exactly.
Nice one.
All right, well, what do we got next?
Okay, so next we're going with Jenny the Deep. This is Finding My Way Back from Out of Her Unconscious Lies.
All right. Narcissistic are her new ways. As she grows older, her looks will fade. Ignoring facts, she parades around town as if she's wearing Miss America's crown. But really, she looks like a confused clown. Can no longer look at her at the same. Going around acting two-faced and fake, remorseful regrets reflecting back at her, glaring back at her thoughts unable to center. Consciously and unconsciously, she is lost, seemingly willing to sacrifice her real loves. Unable to watch anymore, I close my eyes. Disintegrating is the writing on the wall. Once her beauty fades, she will lose it all. Sailing away from her as her eyes watch, I say goodbye to our mistakes of yesterday, cleaning my conscience my hands I wash of her in the purifying idyllic waves and poem.
Okay, I mean, listening to this, I mean, obviously it seems to me they've chosen the same prompt as the previous poem that we had, which is dealing with the subject of narcissism again. And there are some great lines in here. I love the final line, sailing away from her, her eyes watch. I say goodbye to our mates of yesterday. Cleaning my conscience, my hands I wash of her in the purifying idyllic waves. Purifying idyllic waves. What a great line there. I really like this. I think Jenny's really captured the essence there of what it is again, you know, to be sort of lost in this fake facade of losing yourself in what you look like rather than what you are like, willing to sacrifice her real loves, unable to watch anymore. I close my eyes. She's lost. It really sums up that this person is just deluding themselves by losing touch with what really matters in life. And I think that's very well expressed in this piece. So very well done. I liked it. Well done, Jenny.
Absolutely.
What do you think?
First of all, great comment there. I like how you bring up the fact that the person is deluding themselves. Jenny actually wrote to, there was two prompts in the contest, and she wrote to them both, the narcissist one, and then the other quote by W.H. Auden that I had in that contest was, the center that I cannot find is known to my unconscious mind. And I definitely feel like I see more of the narcissist one in there, but you can also see where she brings in the idea of the conscience and the, you know, where, and also where she says, can no longer look at her the same, going around acting two-faced and fake, remorseful regrets, reflecting back at her, glaring back at her, thoughts unable to center. So here we have someone who's the conflicting opposite of Auden's quote, somebody who can't, you know, find that ability to center themselves. I thought this was a wonderful take on both prompts, an emotive right. I like how it speaks on somebody who is cruel on the inside and blind to their fading beauty. But I think the most important message of this right is the fact that it speaks to me on that knowing when to walk away from a friendship or any sort of relationship, knowing when you just have to say, okay, you're not willing to change, you're hurting people, you're hurting yourself, and you have to just step away from the situation and from the person. And I like that she brings in the ending line the idea of cleaning my consciousness, my hands I wash of her in the purifying idyllic waves. And sometimes you just have to do that. You have to wash your hands of a person or a situation. Just an excellent write by Jenny and very well done. And back to you.
Okie dokie. So next, just give me a sec here. You know where I went wrong there? I was trying to comment on the board, and I told you I just cannot multitask for the life of me. Here we go.
I get it.
Okay, so next we've got a piece called Narcissistic Nuance by Alistair Hugh Muir. And if it's okay with you, Pam, I think I'd like to have a crack at reading this one.
Go for it.
So here we have Narcissistic Nuance by Alistair Hugh Muir. For what to mind is pulchritude of love? Is it perhaps a constant well of hope? Denied delight, detritus, darkest dove. Released to skies above like deathly trope. In life, such troubled mind hangs on to dream, a constant balm of self-respect and lies, the truth of stark reality, a scheme to drown the sound of narcissistic cries. So better is pursuit of known desire that never changes, ages, or declines. No imperfection ravages like fire a figure of such beauty without lines. Is such deluded misconception wrong, or just a sad refrain in mourning song? End poem.
Wonderful read there. Yeah, this is one of the, a lot of times when I do 8 spots or less contests, I judge them right away just, you know, because I get them out of the way and I can get a new contest started. And so this one, I gave the gold. I thought it was a great take of the chosen prompt, which was the narcissist quote. My initial comment, which of course my comments tend to be short and sweet, was wonderful rhyme and stunning word choices. An excellent right that speaks to me of knowing that at some point we must let go of the illusion and face the stark reality of life. You know, this really did, it had such, with his word choices and his rhyme, it had such a classic feel to it. And you can see the struggle of the narcissistic mind. You know, I really like the use of the word trope. Release the skies above like deathly trope. In life, such troubled mind hangs on to dream, a constant balm of self-respect and lies, the truth of stark reality, a scheme. And, you know, the constant balm of self-respect and lies, I like that he put those two together, because it's almost like, you know, the self-respect becomes false. It becomes this cover-up for what a person is really feeling like on the inside. All the way through, I thought this had wonderful lines speaking on the idea of what it's like to suddenly face that reality when a person realizes that they're not as wonderful and as beautiful as they thought they were. I also really liked the ending, like how he put questions at the end, because, you know, I know some people say, I know some people really don't like questions in poetry, and I get it. It can be overused, but I think if you have one or two questions, it gives, especially at the end, it gives the reader an opportunity to think with you. And I like that mourning is like the mourning of grieving and not like, you know, the daytime mourning. But I think you could almost use that as a play on words or a duality, because while it's that song of grief, it can also be that song of waking up and to that new realization of what that troubled and egotistical person is truly like. So wonderful write by Alistair, and very well done. And your thoughts? Arcana, are you on mute? Oh, am I on mute? I can't.
Hello,
mute.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can.
Right, sorry yes. About that. Yes, I was on mute. My bad.
Okay.
I was saying that I've had a piece from Alistair in one of my previous contests, and I'm quite struck by this poet. He's very erudite and also very clever. I like the way that he puts his lines together, and he's obviously clearly a wordsmith with the words that he's using. I mean, how often do we see the word pulchritude used, you know, being a word meaning beauty? So for what to mind is beauty or love, basically. And it plays into what you were saying perfectly. Your comment on this piece is spot on, Pam. I like the way that he gets into no imperfection ravages like fire. a figure of such beauty without lines? Is such deluded misconception wrong? First question. Or just a sad refrain in morning song? Second question. So he's actually sort of saying, is it wrong to feel like this? You know, is it, you could almost interpret it in another way. You could almost say, is it wrong to be narcissistic? Is it wrong to think that beauty is important, or trying to look your best, or however you want to phrase it? Or is it indeed just a misconception, just a sidetrack on life's path where you're fooling yourself? So there's some very interesting questions being asked at the end of this piece, which all in all is a very, very well worded and beautifully put brevity. Very well done, Alistair. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I like that you brought up the word pulchritude, because that was a great choice. And I like what you had to say there about how it could be that other way it could be interpreted. And you're right, because it does make you think, like, where is that fine line between being told you're a narcissist? And I know it's actually a mental disease, you know, and there are actual symptoms. But, you know, is there anything wrong with actually having pride in yourself, or enjoying, you know, physical beauty, or believing that for whatever reason that you're physically beautiful, you know? And where does, you know, do people have a misunderstanding of the difference between saying, yes, I find myself attractive, and yes, I'm a complete narcissist, you know?
Yeah. I think you're dead right there, Pam. Yeah, I think you're dead right, because I think at the end of the day, it's one thing to try and make the best of what you have, which we all do, let's face it. But on the other hand, to actually sort of do it in an arrogant way where you think that you're above other people around you, I think that's where narcissism creeps in. So there is a fine line between the two, and obviously, if you're just making the best of yourself, that's great. Hey, you know, good luck with it. We all do that. Me too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. What do we got next?
So next we have, here we go. Piece is called Solo Hide and Seek by Julie Book. Are you going to take this one away, Pam?
Absolutely. I'll be happy to. What good be I if I am unaware, searching for a balance that just ain't there? Why elude me so when I am you? I look but cannot, nor do not find, like a cruel game of solo hide and seek. The truth sleeps in my benumbed mind. It's a cutthroat bite to the jugular tonight. And the crickets in the thicket take flight. The core of who I am, the me of whom I donated interest in getting to know, got stuck in a stream of cerebral muck, and now won't let me the hell go. End poem.
Great read.
Thank you.
Okay. Interesting piece, this, and quite thought-provoking. There seems to be deeper depths to its outwardly appearing simplicity. What good be I if I'm unaware, searching for a balance that just ain't there? I mean, this is from the quote, the center that I cannot find is known to my unconscious mind. And it sort of speaks of what we are deep down inside. That we may not be aware of how that projects outwardly towards those around us. The core of who I am, the me of whom I donated interest in getting to know, you know, speaks of actually learning to understand yourself and and how you actually come across, and being mindful of the way that you interact with people around you. Got stuck in a stream of cerebral muck and now won't let me the hell go. You know, that's kind of like getting bogged down in sort of probably overanalyzing yourself and becoming too self-critical, where ultimately it results in completely losing self-belief and self-confidence, which is the downside of that scenario. But I think there's some great lines in there that are very, very thought-provoking, and I really enjoyed it. Great piece.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I too really like poetry that makes me think. I thought this was, you know, a really hard-hitting and edgy poem, and it had powerful lines and brilliant imagery and metaphors. I thought it was a self-reflective write on trying to find the truth within ourselves beneath the heavy weight of gloom and criticism. You know, I did give this one the silver because I felt like she, like you said, it's layered beneath the deceptive simplicity. I really like the phrase, like a cruel game of solo hide and seek. I also found it fascinating that she capitalized both the I and the A and M of M, almost as if she wanted to shout that part out, almost like, you know, you feel like in that moment she's really emphasizing the I am. I also liked how she threw in that couplet with the just really catchy rhyme. I mean, it's dark imagery, but it's catchy. It's a cutthroat bite to the jugular tonight, and the crickets in the thicket take flight. I mean, you just feel like those two lines, I do anyways, represent this idea of just complete chaos going on in the mind and tearing it apart and sending it flying everywhere. So powerful write by Julian. Very well done.
All right. Up on some great lines there, Pam. And I meant to mention that myself, actually, about the cutthroat bite and the thicket take flight. Great lines there. Okay, so next we're going to have our dear friend Kate's piece, which is Inner Mind by Weaver of Dreams. So I'm going to read this one. Inner Mind by Weaver of Dreams. As a child, I thought that everyone felt the mild background discord of an itch you can't reach as I did. Now I'm grown, it has grown too into a feeling of something missing. A road less travelled, a wrong turn taken, a hidden yearning, a space that held the possibilities for a different life. Consider, if I found the key to that door, step through to discover I was the one who had locked the portal to that path, when the younger me discovered that within lurked only pain, doubt, despair.
Wonderful read there, Arcana. And what a beautiful write by Kate. I really liked this one. This was the bronze winner in the contest. You know, amazing imagery and metaphors. I like how she takes and writes a story that takes either herself or a character. And either way, it doesn't matter. It still has the same emotional impact to me. That goes from childhood to adulthood. And I think there's so many people out there. I think many of us creative people, poets, artists, feel as children different than our peers. And we have to kind of mature into ourselves. I, of course, like the mention of the doors because, you know, it makes me think of the quote, there are things known and things unknown, and in between are the doors. I like how it speaks on to me anyways, on the realization that we hold the keys to the doors within our own mind. And I also enjoy and appreciate how this speaks on the need to learn and experience new things. And it makes me think of the word wanderlust, you know, people who just have that desire to travel. Now I've grown into a feeling of something missing, a road less traveled, a wrong turn taken, a hidden yearning, a space that held the possibilities for a different life. I think those are just beautiful, beautiful lines and very well done. And your thoughts, Arcana?
Again, with this piece, I think Katie has managed to make a very, very deep piece with this, because it provoked so many different thoughts. As you said yourself, it starts off as a child, and that kind of innocent outlook on life, where, you know, you're looking around, you're trying to find yourself, you're trying to discover where your place is in life, where your niche is. And sometimes during that journey, we make the wrong turn, we meet the wrong people, we do the wrong things, we may even enter into a relationship with the wrong person that ends up having a profound effect on our lives and also on ourselves and our own psyche. A road less traveled, a wrong turn taken, a hidden yearning, a space that held the possibilities for a different life. And then there's this kind of lament at the end, where there's a reminiscence where, consider if I'd found the key to that door, stepped through to discover I was the one who had locked the portal to that path, when the younger me discovered that within lurked only pain, doubt and despair. You know, what if things had been different? What if I'd just done one little thing that changed the whole course of my life from that point forwards? What would the outcome have been, and how would I be different if that had been a different situation? So I think that's really well put, and I think it's a very deep piece, and I really thought it was really enjoyable. I really liked it. Brilliant writing there, Kate.
And that is so true. I think, yeah, you're right. Many of us do wonder, you know, what if I had just made a slightly different choice? You know, where would I have ended up? You know, so great observation.
Absolutely.
There. All right. What do we got next?
Okay. So next we've got the inimitable Betty Page coming up. So this piece is called Lost My Mind by Betty Page. Pam, take it away.
All right. I think back in time, this little girl I once was hides somewhere within, lives in fairy tales, imagination runs free. She's love, her true self. Lately can't find her. There's only pain and sadness, my subconscious thoughts. Fight, fight. I just freeze, gazing at these stormy skies. Wish they just turned blue, like when I was two, when everything was so new. Things were beautiful. I felt I was loved. Family surrounded me, most of them gone now. I stare in these skies, telling God I've lost my mind, become so depressed. I cannot stop it. These subconscious fears come on, won't leave me alone. Left me so jaded, my outlook on life is bleak. See reality, yet I still do hope. I search for rainbows above to find their treasure, love without measure, unconditional and true. How I wish I knew what real love feels like. Wonder, will I ever know or just die alone? I'm getting older. Chances are looking smaller each and every day. Where's that little girl whose only thoughts were of love? Fairy tales came true. Those dreams have shattered. Shards of broken glass pierce me. I bleed out slowly from my broken heart. Thoughts of love spill on the floor to be trampled on. when I need love most, to most all that I love now, I just don't matter. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Wow. You know what? This really touched me. It kind of speaks to me of someone who has a very regimented, conditioned life. They've been stifled by their upbringing, but inside they're a free spirit. And all they want really is love and to be loved. And all that, all those hopes and dreams they had when they were young, you know, the dream ending, the dream marriage, meeting their Prince Charming, has all melted away in some harsh tide of reality that's left them kind of damaged and, what's the word I'm looking for, cynical about life in general. Those dreams of shattered shards of broken glass pierce me. I bleed out slowly from my broken heart. Thoughts of love spill on the floor to be trampled on. When I need love most, to most all that I love now, I just don't matter. They feel cast aside as if they are just baggage in life's path and nobody really cares or is taking any notice of them. Very, very emotive piece, very touching, and brilliantly put. I think Chris has done a great job with this piece, and I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, this is definitely an emotive and deep piece. And I like what you had to say about how oftentimes when you go through this pain and betrayal, you know, especially when it comes to love, you start to become cynical. And I thought cynical was a perfect word choice for that observation on Betty's poem. You know, this just has a wonderful flow of thoughts, emotive, relatable to myself, to many people, I'm sure. I like how this speaks on the innocence of a child's mind and how it's replaced with distrust and a feeling of being unloved. And, you know, I like her, as always, her 5-7-5 lines, which create a really nice meter and lyrical quality to me anyways. And I'm getting older. Chances are looking smaller each and every day. You know, and, you know, I think for many of us, as we get up there in age, you just kind of feel like those chances do get smaller. And where's that little girl whose only thoughts were of love, fairy tales came true? You know, it seems oftentimes in the youthful heart, there's such a sense of hope that all those fairy tale dreams will come true. And then you just start feeling more bitter, more unloved. And I really like the emotional impact of those last couple of stanzas, and where she says, from my broken heart, thoughts of love spill on the floor to be trampled on. You know, it feels oftentimes like it's the really good, kind-hearted people that people insist on trampling over. So just an amazing write and very well done.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Pam. And you know what? It seems that as we get older, as we move through the years and we look back on things, sometimes if things don't work out and we sort of end up back on our own, looking for something or looking for someone, we sort of feel cast aside, like there's no way back because we're past our best now. We haven't got the looks we had when we were younger. We haven't got that beauty or that appeal. And many people feel that there's no way forward for them. They just give up. When really, they're missing the bigger picture, which is for every one of them, there is an opposite somewhere out there. There is a counterpart that's gone through exactly the same thing, who's feeling exactly the same thing. And so I would say never give up, never ever give up, and never put yourself down.
That is really good advice there, Arcana. Absolutely. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was the last entry for that contest, correct?
Indeed it was.
All right. So then we'll. What do we got next?
I think we may have a SoundCloud, may we?
Yes. Yes, we do. We do. Do you want to go ahead and put that link up?
Okie dokie, doing that now.
So just to let people know, this link is going to be to the classic poem, is it Kairos and Logos, if I remember right?
I believe that's the one. Yep. Here we go now. It's coming up now. There you go.
All right. Wonderful. Oh, that's the wrong one. That's A New King and Queen by the Warrior Poet.
Oh.
It would be the one right above that. Yep. No problem.
Apologies.
But yes. I do want to let people know that our good, dear friend Selena was nice enough to make a recording of this poem, which is an 11-minute reading. So a great big thank you to her. She does a lovely job of this. I don't normally put up 11-minute poems, not even as prompts, but sometimes I like to offer up something that has a bit of meat to it. And this poem by W.H. Auden, read by Selena, definitely has plenty of food for thought.
Okay, what I've done is this, Pam. I've put up the link to the Kairos and Logos recital. So if we want to play the SoundCloud to that, and then after we've done that, can go on to the Warrior Poets piece. Does that sound okay?
All right. That sounds like a good plan to me. All right, so here we go.
Kairos and Logos by W.H. Auden. One. Around them boomed the rhetoric of time, the smells and furniture of the known world, where conscience worshipped an ascetic order, and what was unsuccessful was condemned, and, at the center of its vast self-love, the emperor and his pleasures, dreading death. In lovely verse, that military order, transferring its obsession unto time, besieged the body and cuckolded love, puzzling the boys of an athletic world. These only feared another kind of death, to which the time obsessed are all condemned. Night and the rivers sang a cationic love, destroyer of cities and the daylight order, but seemed to them weak arguments for death. The apple tree that cannot measure time might taste the apple, yet not be condemned. They, to enjoy it, must renounce the world. Friendly to what the sensual call death, placing their lives below the dogs who love their fallen masters and are not condemned, they came to life within a dying order, outside the sunshine of its civil world. The savage waited their appointed time. Its brilliant self-assertions were condemned to interest the forests and draw deaths on aqueducts and learning. Yet the world through them had witnessed when predestined love fell like a daring meteor into time, the condescension of eternal order. So, sown in little clumps about the world. The fair, the faithful and the uncondemned broke out spontaneously all over time, setting against the random facts of death a ground and possibility of order, against defeat the certainty of love. And never, like its own, condemned the world or hated time, but sang until their death, O thou who lovest, set its love in order. 2. Quite suddenly her dream became a word. There stood the unicorn declaring, Child. She kissed her dolls goodbye and one by one embraced the faithful roses in the garden, waved for the last time to her mother's home, and tiptoed out into the silent forest, and seemed the lucky, the predestined one, for whom the stones made way without a word, and sparrows fought to make her feel at home, and winds restrained their storms before the child, and all the children of that mother forest were told to let her treat it as her garden, till she forgot that she was not at home, where she was loved, of course, by everyone, could always tell the rosebush, be a forest, or make dolls guess when she had thought a word, or play at being mother in the garden, and have importance as her only child. So, scampering like a sparrow through the forest, she piled up stones, pretending they were home, called the wild roses that she picked my garden, made any wind she chose the naughty one, talked to herself as to a doll, a child, whose mother magic knew the magic word, and took the earth for granted as her garden, till the day came the children of the forest ceased to regard or treat her as a child. The roses frowned at her untidy home. The sparrows laughed when she misspelt a word. Winds cried, a mother should behave like one. Frightened and cruel, like a guilty child, she shouted all the roses from her garden and threw stones at the winds without a word. The unicorn slipped off into the forest like an offended doll, and one by one the sparrows flew back to her mother's home. Of course, the forest overran her garden, yet, though like everyone, she lost her home, the word still nursed its motherhood, its child. Three. If one could name the father of these things, they would not happen to decide one's fate. He woke one morning and the verbal truth, he went to bed with, was no longer there. The years of reading fell away. His eyes beheld the weights and contours of the earth. One must be passive to conceive the truth. The bright and brutal surfaces of things awaited the decision of his eyes. These pretty girls, to be embraced by fate and mother all the objects of the earth. The fatherhood of knowledge stood out there. One notices, if one will trust one's eyes, the shadow cast by language upon truth. He saw his role as father to an earth whose speechless, separate and ambiguous things married at his decision. He was there to show a lucid passion for their fate. One has good reason to award the earth the dog-like dumb devotion of the eyes. Death, love, dishonor are predicted there. Her arbitrary moments are the truth. No, He was not the father of his fate. The power of decision lay with things. To know, one must decide what is not there, where sickness is and nothing. All that earth presented was a challenge to his fate. To father dreams of talking oaks, of eyes in wars, catastrophes, sins, poems, things whose possibilities excluded truth. What one expects is not, of course, one's fate. When he had finished looking at them, there were helpless images instead of things that had looked so decided. Instead of earth, his fatherless creation. Instead of truth, the luckiest convention of his eyes. Thad saw himself there with an exile's eyes, missing his father, a thing of earth, on whose decision hung the fate of truth. Four. Castle and crown are faded clean away. The fountain sinks into a level silence. What kingdom can be reached by the occasions that climb the broken ladders of our lives? We are imprisoned in unbounded spaces, defined by an indefinite confusion. We should have wept before these occasions. We should have given what is snatched away. Oh, columns, acrobats of cheering spaces, oh, songs that were the royal wives of silence, now you are art and part of our confusion. We are at loggerheads with our own lives. The order of the macrocosmic spaces, the outward calm of their remote occasions, has lost all interest in our confusion. Our inner regimen has given way. The subatomic gulfs confront our lives with the cold stare of their eternal silence. Where are the kings who rooted all confusion, the bearded gods who shepherded the spaces, the merchants who poured gold into our lives? Where the historic fruits, the great occasions? Laurel and language wither into silence. The nymphs and oracles have fled away. And cold and absence echo on our lives. We are your conscience of your own confusion that made a stricken widow of the silence and weeping orphans of the unarmed spaces that laid time waste behind you, stole away the birthright of innumerable occasions. O blessing of reproach, O proof that silence and condemnation presuppose our lives. We are not lost, but only run away, the authors and the powers of confusion. We are the promise of unborn occasions. Our presence is required by all the spaces. The flora of our lives could guide occasions without confusion on their frisking way through all the silences and all the spaces.
Wonderful, just absolutely wonderful read there, Stelina. Thank you so much. I was so thrilled and happy and still am that Stelina said yes to recording this classic poem, Kairos and Logos, which is one of my favorites by W.H. Auden. And her read of it and her choice of background music was just absolutely stunning and definitely worth listening to for 11 minutes. I was captivated from beginning to end. And did you want to say anything about either the poem and or Stelina's recording of it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, as for Stelina's recording of it, wow. You know, what an incredible SoundCloud and recital. You know, talk about a professional reading. I know that Stelina is a fan of the classics, and she loves classical music, classical poetry, and this was right up her street, and she's really done it justice with that fantastic recital there. And sort of looking through it, there were just pieces of it that sort of like reached out into me. I mean, the order of the macrocosmic spaces, the outward calm of their remote occasions, has lost all interest in our confusion. Our inner regimen has given way. The subatomic gulfs confront our lives with a cold stare of their internal silence. Wow. I mean, that's deep. You know, that's really deep. And there's so many great bits in this. Obviously, it's too long to go through them. But, yeah, wonderful piece and wonderful recital there from Stelina.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And, yes, I have to agree. And now we can get into the rites that were inspired by this particular piece. All right. So what do we got next?
So I think we'll go with that one from Warrior Poet that I put up by mistake earlier.
Oh, okay. Yep. I think it got slightly buried by conversation. I don't know if you're...
Yeah, I've gone back to this. Do you want me to read this one, Pam? Or do you want to read it?
Go for it, whatever you want. You know what?
Okay.
Your choice, so go for it.
I've got it in front of me, so I'll roll with it. So here we have A New King and Queen by The Warrior Poet. King Charlie III and Queen Camilla I. The coronation King Charles III and his wife Queen Camilla I. Army, Navy and the Air Force. Kings and queens the world over, princes and princesses, presidents and prime ministers, television stations worldwide, radio stations and sky, stars from the world over. Millions of people line the route, newspapers and magazines, the whole world and his mate are there. The royal standard flies high. Long live the King and Queen, King Charles III and Queen Camilla I. God save the King and Queen. End poet. End poet. Slip of the tongue there.
yep. Freudian slip or something like that. I'm not sure what, but no, that was funny. And great read there. You know, I really like this one, as it kind of took a different approach. And it's funny because when you have such a long prompt, you know, you have to, like, I had to go back and reread the poem because I was like, okay, how did he get this? You know, where does this come from? Because when I put up a poem as a prompt, no matter what the length of the poem, but especially when it's a longer one, I always tell people that they can be inspired by any part or the general vibe of the poem. And you know, but, you know, it had been a while. I put up the contest, got this right, went to go take a look at it and, you know, read and comment. And so I had to go back to B.H. Auden's poem and realize there was parts where, you know, like, you know, kings and queens and, you know, royalty was mentioned. So I thought, okay, well, he must have really focused in on that part and connected it with a current event, because he wrote this obviously right around the time of the coronation of King Charles and the Third. And I have to say that this gives a great visual view of the event, which obviously I was not invited to. I don't know why. I'm assuming my invite got lost in the mail.
Tush.
You know.
That's terrible.
But You know, I think this is just a wonderful snapshot of that event and the modern times that are a part of it. Radio stations and sky stars from the world over, millions of people line the route, newspapers and magazines. You know, so wonderful, wonderful, right, and very well done. And I am curious if you know what does line the route mean? Because I feel like because you and him might be closer into a similar area than me and him are, because, you know, like I'm really not getting what line the route means.
Well, you know something, you've just echoed my thoughts precisely there, because I wasn't sure myself. I wasn't sure whether, because he's worded root, R-O-O-T, as in the root of something that suggests, you know, that the base of something that's growing from deep down, or whether he means, whether he meant to say the root as in R-O-U-T-E, you know, the route that they took.
Oh,
means of people
okay.
Lining
oh,
the route.
The route. Okay, the route route. Yeah. Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So I'm not sure,
yeah.
or whether that was a wordplay on both, where he's talking about the route that they took, but also at the same time what led to that route, because obviously he's bringing Camilla into this, and obviously Camilla was sort of like the end product of a failed marriage to poor old Princess Diana, who my heart goes out to. Like you said, I think it sums up the event very well, and really puts it out there. It's very evocative, the way that it sort of brings everything in, you know. Presidents, prime ministers, television stations, radio stations, sky stars, the world over, millions of people standing there waiting, watching, newspapers and magazines. As he eloquently puts it, the whole world and his mate are there. So it is a global event to be witnessed, if you're a royalist, which I have to say I'm not, to be fair, but, you know, for those that are, it was there. It's there for everyone to see, and it's well described in this piece. Well done there, Eamon. Great piece.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I sometimes find the going-ons of the royal family fascinating, but all in all, I don't obviously pay a whole lot of attention to it. But I do have to say, I do think that the untimely death of Princess Diana was one of the most saddest deaths in history. You know, not
Absolutely.
Only the circumstances, but the fact that she truly came across as a beautiful soul, you know.
Absolutely, Pam. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And let's face it, if things were different and if this was anybody else other than the current king or, you know, the prince who was in waiting at the time, what would the newspapers have been saying about it if it had just been any other celebrity? You know, the fact that they were two-timing and cheating on their wife who had bared their children for them. And was with another person during the whole time. You know, it's all very sad, but hey, that's another story.
Absolutely. That's another story. That's just a totally different poem. So,
okay,
wonderful comment there.
Let's move on. Next up, we have The Order of Love Condemns the Lustful by Jenny the Deep.
All right. Flatulence exploding inside confused heads, stinking up once innocent thoughts. The silent, deadly evil must be fought before the stench spreads like poisonous lead. Toxic gases cloud clear, concise correlations, Its smoke makes the unholy unable to breathe and too discombobulated to speak. The only way out is lingering lust deflations. Love has no order, no rhyme or reason. Giving your heart away to more than one is the contesting cheater's Chauncey Khan, condemned in death due to lust treason. No order in love, but there is moral integrity. Let the impure and guilty fear death's lair. Rejoicing in salvation are the faithful and fair. Even the emperor gets condemned for greed. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Okay. I don't suppose you have to hand what the actual prompt was for this piece, do you, by any chance?
You know what? It was, she didn't say specifically which lines, but it looks like, okay, well, she did put in her A-N part of the poem.
That must have been
part of the poem that inspired her. And it was quite a bit, but it wasn't like the whole poem. So you can get a general idea if you look at the A-N of which part she chose.
Okay. I mean, Jenny's used some great language in this piece. She's really picked out some great words. I love the use of discombobulated, toxic gases, cloud clear, concise correlations. You know, she's running off with the alliteration lines there. Its smoke makes the unholy unable to breathe and too discombobulated to speak. The only way out is lingering lust's deflations. Great lines of alliteration throughout. And I know that Jenny's really experimenting at the moment quite deeply with alliteration in her poetry. And, you know, she likes to include it. The thing with alliteration is obviously that there is a line somewhere where you've got to be careful when you use it, that you use it in the correct way, that it actually flows and makes sense, because otherwise you just end up with a series of words that start with the same letter that don't really sort of gel very well together. But here in this piece, she's done it very well, and it does flow very well. So I think on a technical level, you know, it's very well written. I like what she's actually saying here as well. And I like some of the imagery that she portrays. Flatulence exploding inside confused heads. I love that line. Stinking up once innocent thoughts. Great lines there. Love that one. No order in love, but there is moral integrity. Let the impure and guilty fear death's lair. Rejoicing in salvation are the faithful and fair. Even the emperor gets condemned for greed. Yeah, great. I love it. She's also here and there just got in the odd little bit of rhyming as well, which is subtly done. And I think that the whole piece is very well put together. So great, right, Jenny? Enjoyed it.
Absolutely, yes, I have to agree. And yeah, the beginning line, especially because, you know, the order of love condemns the lustful, so you really don't expect the first word for the poem to be flatulence, you know flatulence, yeah. Exploding into my confused heads, and it just throws you for a loop.
Absolutely.
But in a good way, you know, I definitely mean that as a compliment, because I think a poem that gets your attention right away, makes you open up your eyes and go, hey, what's going on here? Speaks a lot for the poem. And yes, I have to agree with alliteration. It can't just be words thrown together with the same sound. It has to make sense and fit with the poem. And Jenny definitely does a great job of that. I love her use of the word discombobulated. That's just a great word. My favorite alliteration is a contesting cheater's Chauncey Khan. Those are wonderful lines. I also like how she says, love has no order, no rhyme or reason. You know, sometimes we have this idea of who and what kind of person we're going to fall in love with. And you know what? It doesn't always end up working out that way. I thought this was a great takeoff of the prompt. It had powerful imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on the power of love in a violent world, but also looking at the fact that the world is so greedy and people are out to poison each other's minds with all this greed and hate and violence, and how, you know, love is supposed to be about not wanting to hurt people. You know, not wanting to only look out for ourselves. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we got next?
Great observations there, Pam. So next, we're going to go with, I'm just following the order that these are on the board at the moment. So next we have another piece by Betty Page. This one is Silent Spaces, which I shall read. Silent Spaces by Betty Page. Caged by pretty scenery, sweet lullabies consuming luxurious dreamery, cotton candy clouds drifting. Let's jump across broken bridges, watch cascading streams below, dance across castle's ledges, tumble round sacred meadows, playing midst rivers and streams, vividly so enchanting, mends what falls apart that seems erotic, mesmerizing. Caged by pretty scenery, sweet lullabies consuming, luxurious dreamery, cotton candy clouds drifting. Let's jump across broken bridges, watch cascading streams below, dance across castle's ledges, tumble round sacred meadows, chase rainbows in waterfalls, hypnotized by falling rain. In Rapunzel's lair she calls her prince to come back again.
Great read there, Arcana. And Betty chose this part from the poem. Castle and crown are faded clean away. The fountain sinks into a level silence. What kingdom can be reached by the occasions that climb the broken ladders of our lives? We are imprisoned in unbounded spaces, defined by an indefinite confusion. And I thought that was this is a really great takeoff of that prompt. And I love the imagery in this and how she brings us into that almost fairy tale like look at, you know, but also and simple language in some ways, but in other ways, a very layered piece. I like how this speaks on like, I love the imagery of cotton candy clouds drifting. Like you can just see those pink fluffy clouds at like either sunrise or sunset. But there's also a little kind of darkness in this, but also a sense of hope. You know, I feel like there's a darkness in the line caged by pretty scenery. The idea that everything around you is so beautiful, and yet it's still a cage. I also really liked and thought there was kind of a sense of hope in let's jump across broken bridges, because it makes me think of the saying about, you know, burning bridges. You know, when you're ready to give up on something, when you're no longer, don't want to be in that situation, that relationship, that friendship, and you burn the bridge. But here, instead of having it completely burned down, it's broken. And, you know, there's almost this sense of hope that you can still get across, that you can still, you know, fix the bridge, fix the, it almost feels like two people who are in a relationship and there's this distance that has become between them. And she wants to close that distance. Of course, I always enjoy Betty's fairy tale references. Like in here, she mentions Rapunzel chasing rainbows and waterfalls, hypnotized by fallen rain. In Rapunzel's lair, she calls her prince to come back again. You know, wonderful, right, on finding your way across broken bridges to the arms of love. And, you know, just beautiful imagery, and how cool that she decided to try the four-line stanzas, and very cool there. So wonderful, right? And your thoughts?
I'm with you on the fairy tale side of it, because the whole piece to me sort of reads like there's this kind of a likening to a fairy tale. There's so much imagery that she throws into this piece, you know, and there's this refrain that she keeps throwing in as well about jumping across broken bridges with cascading streams below, dance across castles, ledges, tumble round sacred meadows. It's kind of like this idealistic view of the fairy tale ending, what we would all hope for and wish for. And then, yeah, I'm with you as well on the darkness bit, but the darkness spoke to me in the final stanza where she says, chase rainbows in waterfalls, hypnotized by falling rain. In Rapunzel's lair, she calls her prince to come back again. So where's he gone? You know, what's happened to her prince? He's disappeared somewhere. And she's pining for him. She wants him back. So it's like you could almost liken this piece to a typical idealistic view of finding the perfect mate, entering into a relationship with them, which goes sour and goes south. And then they end up sort of, what happened to the Prince Charming that I thought I had, that was within my clutch? They're now gone, and the yearning to have them back. That there's different ways that this piece could be interpreted, which is one of the wonderful things about poetry, let's face it. We each have our own way of looking at things. But I think it's a great piece by Betty here. And I've got to say, I'm impressed. I really like this. I enjoyed it immensely. Well done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and great observation on that end stanza. And yeah, this has Betty's piece and so many of this is just is an impressive night of poetry. So very cool. All right, what do we got next?
Okay, so next we're going with Cedar Chapman. And here we have a piece called You Fell From the Sky. Take it away, Pam.
All right. You fell from the sky, a delicate snowflake whiter than a bleached mountainside on a fresh winter day. I could almost fit you on one hand, but still see the vast universe through your lucid eyes, the unicorns and pixie dust that swirled in your pupils, like seedlings of light with unlimited possibilities. Yet time is an elusive demon who blows his brazen breath to abrade even the toughest of granite stones, rattling his rusty chime as I sang you lullabies, watched your first steps, imagined your Pulitzer Prize. Beginnings are cursed with endings, fire with ash, death with life, through those same eyes that once birthed dreams reflects a man who no longer is your hero, but a statue of your past. The unemployed man-boy who won your affection tracking dirt on your mom's rug with his Nike shoes, the new hero so addicted to mirrors that he can't even see your unicorns whinnying and kicking in front of him, begging for him to resurrect them, to nurture them. Oh, I love him. I adore him. I won't punch him in the throat or tell you to run far away because you deserve more. You are capable of so much more. Because, sweet baby girl, the apple that rolls down a hill is that much sweeter if you don't count the seconds. I shall count for you and let the pendulum swing back and forth over my head like Damocles' sword until one day you are at my bedside and you hold my wrinkled hand, stable my weak, wobbly knees, stare back at your own reflection on my cataract eyes as you help me take my first steps, both of us listening to the sound that eventually finds its way to all of us, tick-tock and poem.
Great read there, Pam. Wow. What a piece this is. You know what? I've got to be perfectly honest here. Because I've sort of like come into the show as a standby tonight, this is one of those pieces where I'd really like to have had the time to study it and study what Cedar's actually saying, because there's so much in there. And there's so many metaphors in there that it really deserves better than I'm able to give it in terms of a comment. And that's just me being honest.
I
love some of the lines in here. There was something that spoke out to me here. These lines really spoke to me. Beginnings are cursed with endings. Fire with ash, death with life. Through those same eyes that once birthed dreams reflect a man who no longer is your hero, but a statue of your past. Wow. I mean, they're great lines there. Very, very cleverly put together. I like the way that she sort of like brings in the antonyms, you know, with beginnings cursed by endings, fire with ash, death with life, and then she goes on to say that those same idealistic eyes that birthed dreams reflected a man that who is no longer your hero. So he once was, but he ain't no more. You know, he's fallen foul of expectations, and now just become a sad lament and a statue of her past mistakes, which sort of is left there to remind her, don't go there again, you know, learn from that one and move on. Great lines in there. There are so many, it's hard to pick them out because, like I say, I'd really like more time to study this. I also like the way she ends it. Love the final line. Until one day you are at my bedside and you hold my wrinkled hand, stable my weak wobbly knees, stare back at your own reflection on my cataract eyes as you help me take my first steps, both of us listening to the sound that eventually finds its way to all of us. Tick, tock, time's ticking by. It's coming to us all. We're all going to get older. We're all going to look back on things and we're all going to have our regrets and past mistakes that we've made. And the way she sums it up is beautifully put, very poetically put as well. So great piece there by Cedar. Really enjoyed it. And as I said before, I'll say it again, it deserves better than the comment that I can give it.
Well, I think you gave it a wonderful comment. Cedar, he is definitely an amazing poet. I think with this particular poem, it helps to read the AN, and since it's not too long, I'm going to go ahead and do that. It's ingrained in Asian and other Middle Eastern cultures to take off your shoes when entering a home. Some even offer slippers for their guests. The line with Nike shoes is meant to be humorous, but also highlight the lack of attention and respect to the daughter's cultural background, dedicated to all the daughters in the world with great dads. No man will ever measure up through his eyes. You'll have to be patient and let the process unravel. I hope this gives a slice of what goes on in a father's mind as you bring home your boyfriends. Perhaps you will see things in a different light and appreciate his silence. And then he says at the end for ESP, and I'm not sure if ESP is his own daughter or a daughter-like figure to him or something else, but, obviously a wonderful dedication. And the thing with the way that Cedar writes is he does use so much imagery and metaphors and so much unique, word choicing that you kind of have to take a breath, read it a couple times or more, and really look at the layers of this. You know, such wonderful imagery and metaphors. A beautiful emotive write, and he does go back and forth very well between humor and seriousness, and to me, between reading the poem like a couple times and reading the AN, or probably actually I'm sure I read it more than a couple times, but I usually do, you really begin to see between the imagery and metaphors, the voice of a father who deeply loves his daughter and has seen what a magical person is and has been since a child. And all he wants for her is to find that one man that sees and appreciates, the magic inside of her. But also he brings in the idea. And if I remember right, I think Cedar is from an Asian culture. He takes this from the point of view of a man who wants his culture respected. I really liked this. I liked the bite in the unemployed man boy who won your affection, tracking dirt on your mom's rug with his Nike shoe, the new hero so addicted to mirrors that he can't even see your unicorns. And then, of course, I love him. I adore him. I won't punch him in the throat or tell you to run far away. I'm sure there's many a father or father-like figure who has imagined at one time or another punching some guy in the throat. So just a wonderful, emotionally charged write and very well done.
Yeah, and listening to you, Pam, and what you've just said, it all makes so much more sense to me now. You've enlightened me with your comments there, and you're right. And basically, he's speaking from the point of view of a father who's growing old, watching the daughter growing up, and he's watched her through birth, and at the end, he's actually taking his first steps again, as he becomes old and decrepit and is actually knocking on death's door, like a second childhood, which, as he says, finds its way to all of us. TikTok, great, great, great piece. Okay, so next we have a piece called Beyond the Veil by Robert J. Teese, which I'm just putting up on the board now for you. Give me a sec here.
All right, no problem.
I hate being a bloke who can't multitask.
Here we go. I get it though.
Right, there it is.
Beyond the Veil by Robert J. Teese. I leave long trails of words behind, no, not to trace my way back home, because there was no going back to what we might have meant at first, but simply to remember, map what I have said once back then, when mere mentioning seemed just enough. Today, though, phrases have no say, expressions, pressure, emptiness, with rushing huffs of summer air, that aimless breath lost in the winds, which flow where language rarely flits, between the leaves and hidden limbs, in forest out of mind and time. Now by the ticking of this watch, the skipping rhythms of this pulse, I hope to make some sense again of consequence, initial cause, inaction's impact, words unsaid, the apathy of acts deferred, contentions of indifference. I'm not prepared to rest content to mention spacious pages left for future hands to fill or fold, nor shall I let my spirit slip toward famished shadows, swallowing more memories, the vacancy of moments yet to be fulfilled. I must take chances even here, so near the yawning precipice of everything unlearned, undone. Why should I fear the falling or the echoes of this ignorance? Reality, I'll face it all from reckoning to rendering. What moments ever fit for pause when we might still amend, befriend, bestow whatever wisdom's left? Let's speak to mean with fearless hands, complete one deed of magnitude before the silent hour knells. Fare further, friends, past last farewells. End poem.
Great piece that is, and a great recital there, Pam, as well. You really did that justice. There are some fabulous lines in here. I'm just looking for one that particularly sort of reached into my psyche. Okay, I'm gonna pull something out, because it's quite a long piece, and there were so many great lines in there. Oh, today, though phrases have no say, expressions, pressure, emptiness, with rushing huffs of summer air, that aimless breath lost in the winds, which flow where language rarely flits, between the leaves and hidden limbs, in forests out of mind and time. Absolutely brilliant lines there. It's almost got kind of an ethereal feel to it. You know, it's taking you somewhere. The last stanza as well. What moments ever fit for pause, when we might still amend, befriend, bestow whatever wisdom's left. Let's speak to mean with fearless hands. Complete one deed of magnitude before the silent hour knells. Fare further, friends, past last farewells. Great lines, great bit of rhythm, and some great rhymes thrown in there as well as wonderful use of metaphor throughout on a technical level. Roberts really put some great stanzas together in this piece. I think it's very, very well put together, very well written, and I really enjoyed listening to it. Great, great, great write.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I like those parts that you picked out. And yeah, this is a beautiful write. I gave this one the gold. Was it gold or bronze? Nope, gold. Okay. Sometimes, honestly, my eyes have a hard time telling between the gold and the bronze. And I end up having to make my screen bigger just to make sure I'm seeing right.
Hello?
But, you know, I really like this one. And I think one of the keys to understanding this poem, and you might already know this, but I don't know if everybody else will, is that, first of all, the word logos is the Greek word for word. You know, and that's why, like, when in the Bible, Jesus refers to himself as the Word, or we call the Bible the Word of God, it's the word logos that is used in the Old Testament or the New Testament Greek. And the word kairos is actually a word for time, but it's specifically the perfect time in which to make a decision, the perfect time, perfect moment in which to, make an action. And so that, I think, comes across in this rite, as he often mentions time and decisions, throughout the rite. I have to say, I found his use of the dashes fascinating, and I thought that was well done and added kind of a classic, almost Emily Dickinson type note to it. And I like that. I like the imagery and the metaphors throughout this. I thought they were just amazing. I like how, to me, it speaks on looking back on the past and learning from it, but reminding ourselves that time is supposed to move forward, that we are supposed to move forward and find our new ways of expressing ourselves and new ways of living, life. So just an amazing rite and very well done.
Great information there, Pam, on the meaning of Kairos and Logos. Which actually goes a long way towards explaining a lot. So that's really cool that you've thrown that in there. And I can totally see why you gave this gold. It's an absolutely stunning rite by Robert.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's see where we're going next. So I think we've covered the poetry from the Kairos and Logos rites. And we're now moving on to the Ganymede rites.
Wonderful.
So we're doing quite well. We're getting through it tonight. And there's some fantastic poetry on offer. So this first one I'm going to put up is called Ganymede by W.H. Auden. Oh, no. That's from the poet himself, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? But I do want that one read. So.
Okay. Would you like me to have a go at reading
that? It's not nearly as long. Yep. Oh, I'm sorry. What did you say?
Would you like me to have a go at reading it, or would you like to read that one yourself?
Yes, you go ahead and you give that a read.
Okay, I'll give it my best. Ganymede by W.H. Auden. He looked in all his wisdom from the throne, down on that humble boy who kept the sheep, and sent a dove. The dove returned alone. Youth liked the music, but soon fell asleep. But he had planned such future for the youth. Surely his duty now was to compel, for later he would come to love the truth and own his gratitude. His eagle fell. It did not work, his conversation bored. The boy who yawned and whistled and made faces and wriggled free from fatherly embraces. But with the eagle, he was always willing to go where it suggested and adored and learned from it so many ways of killing. End poem.
Wonderful read there. And aren't you just breathing a sigh of relief that I had Stelina do the 11-minute read and you got this nice short rhyming one?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, I think this poem is a fine example of W.H. Auden's talent as a rhyming poet. And I'm just going to give real quick information on Ganymede, and then we can go on to the poem since, we don't have much time left. And, we might end up with a couple of carryovers, but we'll see how it goes. So anyways, in Ganymede, in Greek mythology, was a handsome Trojan prince who was carried off to heaven by Zeus in the shape of an eagle, where he was appointed as cupbearer of the gods. Ganymede was often portrayed as the god of homosexual love, and as such appears as a playmate of the love god Eros and Hymenaeus. Ganymede was depicted in Greek vase painting as a handsome youth. So there you go. Now we have a little bit better idea of Ganymede. So, and with that, we'll go on to the next rite.
That's cool. Also, Ganymede is one of the massive natural satellites of Jupiter, so named because of that association that you just mentioned, as a lot of the planets in our solar system have been given through their Greek mythology. Okay,
oh, cool.
So
I like that you gave that information. Very cool.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is we've had a few pieces tonight already from Jenny. So I'm going to stick a piece up now from pieces by the tongue twister. Endymion. Got there in him. The Soft Machine. So, would you like to read that one, Pam?
I would be happy to. Night blooming odors from his oh-so-tangled plumes, dressed in textures of a once-known Eleusinian mushroom, he heaves like silver snake, leaves nitrogenous, a pharaoh androgynous display as metropolitan lights above his head dismiss the poise of his boyish sway. Not a man, but thing above, and in the ampersand, his folds of thin thumps fold at his navel, white oyster indentions, where time tames his almighty pearl in subterranean night. Is not a solitary glance at this all right? Though Simo burned in Solfay away, today the foamed core's stained floor is the bouquet. I adore him. On as he casts one glance at me, straining at the chance to see animosity in his bronze tight chinos, and he knows I know what's going on. A thrack attack like mango mold, we hold it like this for just a fig of a moment, fortuitous, sweet, discreet, secret second, one more, then gone. And poem.
I'm just actually looking to see what the prompt was for this. It kind of comes across that what we've got here is an infatuation with this kind of Adonis type figure that's being described in the poem, and the impression it's leaving on the eyes of the beholder. I like the way he says, leaves nitrogenous, a furrowed, androgynous display as metropolitan lights above his head dismiss the poise of his boyish sway. Not a man, but the thing above, and in the ampersand. There's great, great descriptive lines in there, and it's beautifully wrapped up in metaphors as well. There's the description and the way the use of language, the way that he's put it together, is very impressive. I also like his reference to subterranean night. Great, great way of describing night there. Instead of going down the route of all the words that we usually tend to think of when describing night, he's gone with subterranean, which describes it perfectly because of the darkness in underground caves and caverns. I'm not sure who Samil is, where he says, though Samil burned in so fair way, today the foamed core stained floor is the bouquet. I adore him. There's little bits of inner rhymes in this piece that he's thrown in. It just demonstrates, his ability as a writer. And the use of language like a thrack attack, mango mold, the descriptive imagery that he's portraying in this piece is really impressive. I thought it was a very, very well written piece, very well done, and I can see why this piece as well was awarded the gold. Great choice. And apologies, the piece is titled Endymion, and the writer is a poet called The Soft Machine. I got it the wrong way around. Great piece.
Absolutely. It is a wonderful piece, and definitely a well-deserved gold. It helps, I think, with this piece to know that Endymion, the title of the poem, was in Greek mythology a remarkably beautiful young man loved by the moon Selene. According to one story, he was put in an eternal sleep by Zeus for having fallen in love with Hera, and was then visited every night by Selene. And Semele in Greek mythology was a princess of Thebes, daughter of the hero Cadmus and Harmonia. She was the only mortal to become the parent of a god. So there's a
great
little bit about that. Yes.
Great information there. I can see now you've said that, where I got the Adonis bit from. So, yeah, great. Sorry to interrupt. Carry on, Pam.
No, and I thought that was a great observation you said about the Adonis piece. I loved my goodness, yeah, this was definitely a well-deserved gold. I loved the imagery and metaphors in this, the use of the dashes, the way it flowed. I thought it was a beautiful poem filled with observations of the moment. I like how it draws the reader into a mindset of love and sensuality explored. I thought also there was, you know, I like that he brings in the everyday imagery, like the foam cores, Coors being a brand of beer. You know, I don't know if you have it over there, but it's pretty common here. You know, it just feels like seeing the beauty in someone in the everyday. I also thought, I really liked, you know, where it says, he heaves like silver snake, leaves Nitronis, a pharaoh androgynous display. I like the use of the word androgynous, because to me it feels like it's almost like, because to me in the original, in the Galenie poem by W.H. Auden, there's this a sense of rebellion. And I think when you choose to be an androgynous person, or dress in an androgynous way, you choose to rebel against what society's expectations for the male and female role are. So I really liked this poem and thought it was beautifully written. And let's go ahead and try to fit one more in.
Oh, absolutely. I was just going to say, as personified by David Bowie. Okay.
Absolutely.
Let's see what we've got. So I'm going to try and squeeze this one in by Jim Bellamy. And go. So we've got Luna Burstiv by Jim Bellamy. So I'll read this one for you. The signet of summer flashes against my face and bursts into 1 million stars. All over fat towns, the city fragments, and a wide hurricane crashes as it tangs. Fog heads scream through opal windows and eyes begin to dance through shadow meadows. I trample aside a moonride. I twirl a dream. Colors dissolve and we heed saline dressings. I lash them with defamily. And only mean things remain as sugar pressings. Sign along this fretted dotted line. What is the feeling we neglect about pandemical spirit spies? O age where undressed expresses stars, as communalism, dadaism, doctors of fascism become a model porno sage. Inside 9 decades, a mad queen will be surely malformed. In 9 chiliads, the hands that have never been raised vibrate down the never-forgotten curtains of pure rage. What is the feeling we regret about pandemical parrot eyes? Oh, age, where sun-pressed expresses scars as a keen transparency of flowers revolt now and mends. One of us is a sister slaved under cork and apple skin, and never do we dream of the eyes of a life and bread. Needles of fast famine, underwatered inside bright sin. One of us is a sister slaved under pork and maple skin. What if our lives were put about the sun? Oh, what if the evenings of hollowed water shot sainted lots? But you shall never basket apes, and we will stop, both dead and alone. Amen. End poem.
Great read there, Arcana. I have to say, Jim Bellamy is one of those I have to read a few times. He has such a intriguing and fascinating way of writing that is his own unique style. The main message, and I like the imagery and metaphors in this, is a thought-provoking write with hard-hitting lines. And the main message that I got is the idea of revealing the full truth in the light as the mind becomes aware to slavery of thought. But I really like how this speaks to me of slavery of all kinds, and you know how oftentimes we don't even realize we're imprisoned by society's expectations or by the powers that be. So powerful, right, and very well done. And Arcana, your thoughts?
As you've just said, I mean, it's one of those pieces that you really need to read a few times to really dig into the metaphors. I love this part. Inside 9 decades, a mad queen will be surely malformed. In 9 chiliads, the hands that have never been raised vibrates down the never forgotten curtains of pure rage. Wow. I mean, there are some great observations there. The musing in this piece is something to behold. Put a references there to pandemical. What is the feeling we neglect about pandemical spirit spies? What is the feeling we regret about pandemical parrot eyes? And two different stanzas. So I don't know whether this was in some way influenced by recent events that have happened with the pandemic that we've all been through. And it's sort of an abstract observation on that. But I love the way that he's put his lines together in this piece. I love the use of metaphor, and I think it's very, very well written. And we're running out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it there. But very, very well done, Jim. I loved it.
Absolutely, and great comment. Wonderful show. Thank you so much, Arcana, for co-hosting with me. Great poetry, great fun hanging out with you. Thank you to Stelina for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while we are on live, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all, and have a good night, everyone.
It's been a pleasure hanging out.